Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcast. My name is Suzanne Miller, and today I am pleased to introduce you to myself and Marianne Lapham. Welcome to our ongoing series, Exploring Agile Principles and Their Application Across the Department of Defense. In today's installment, we explore the 10th Agile principle, simplicity. The art of maximizing the amount of work not done is essential. But first, a little bit about myself and Marianne. Marianne's work focuses on supporting and improving the acquisition of software-intensive systems. For Department of Defense programs, this means assisting and advising on software issues at the system or segment level. In addition, she leads research into software topics that are germane to acquisition of software-intensive systems, including the SEI's research in adoption of agile and lean methods in regulated settings like the DoD. My research focuses on synthesizing effective technology transition and management practices from research and industry into effective techniques for use with agile and lean methods in regulated settings like the DoD. This is our 10th podcast, exploring the real-world application of agile principles in Department of Defense settings. If you like what you hear today, there are already 9 podcasts in this series, and we will eventually have 12, one for each agile principle behind the Agile Manifesto. As a reminder, the 4 values and 12 principles of the Agile Manifesto can be found at www.agilemanifesto.org. Today, Marianne, let's talk about simplicity and the work not done. What are challenges to that goal in DoD Agile settings?
You know, Suze, when you said the principle first, my mind immediately went, what do you mean work not done? It just seems like an oxymoron. You know, work, I have a project.
We get paid for doing work,
right? We get paid for doing work. I have a project. I need all these things with the project. What do you mean you're not going to do some of the work that goes with it? That was my immediate thought from a standard traditional, you know, acquisition perspective is, excuse me, work not done? So that's the first thing anybody that wants to use agile principles is going to have to get past of. It doesn't mean not give you what you're asking for. It means maximizing on your return on investment and getting the value you need and then determining if some of the bells and whistles aren't needed.
And we're also talking about the difference between creating complex architectures and complex ways of solving a problem and looking at what's the simplest way. Because often when we say what's the simplest way to do something, we actually stop having to do a lot of the work that goes along with implementing the complex way. So the simplicity is not just about looking at getting value, it's also about reducing complexity. And we're very good as engineers in figuring out lots of convoluted ways to make things work. So this is really saying, don't go there if you don't need to. I go back to, you know, the old Einstein quote, make everything as simple as possible, but no simpler. You know, that's what you're trying to achieve here, is figure out what is the simplest possible way of implementing something. And it goes into the way you work. It can be, you know, the simplest way of showing people what's happening is sometimes post-it notes on a whiteboard. You know, you don't have to use a complicated tool that, you know, you're going to have to buy licenses for and everything if it's a small project. But sometimes that's not the simplest way you can do it. Sometimes you do need some of the other tooling. If I'm in a distributed team, the simple whiteboard in my place is going to be complex to try and photograph and duplicate. So I need to find another simple way to communicate with people. So it's about that philosophy to me of what is the simplest way of doing things, but no simpler.
I agree with that. And the other thing that when you were talking, it came to mind is one of the other principles where, you know, you create a team and you give them the license to go and solve the problem, you know, collaboration and all that. And when you challenge a team with, here's what I need you to solve, you have 2-3 weeks, depending how long your sprint is, to solve it, they're going to very quickly discard the very complex, interesting but not necessarily needed solutions, and they're going to get to the most simple way to get what they need to get done and still give the answer that's
required. And
that's required.
Actually one of the, we go back to some of the timings that are common in Agile settings of the 2-week iteration, the 3-week iteration. You very rarely see anything above 4 weeks. And part of that is to kind of force that simplicity and figure out what are the essential things that need to be done to realize the value of that set of requirements, of that set of items in the product backlog. So all of these things, all these principles do interact with each other.
Very much.
I want to talk about some examples that we've seen of enacting this idea of simplicity. One of the most successful programs that we've worked with in the Air Force has been through 2 complete re-architectings of their system in the last 10 years. And both of those times, they were driven by somewhat by technology. The world of technology is changing. They had to go to service-oriented architectures. But when we talked to them about what their goals were for those re-architectings, one of the goals was always make it simpler. And so that concept, once you get that concept in your head, that's how you look at things, is how do I make this simpler for my user? How do I make this simpler for my developers, for my testers, for my certifiers, all of those things? So now you're not just looking at what's the technical simplicity, but I'm also looking at the simplicity of the process. And that's where we also get into maximizing the amount of work not done. Because if I'm working shoulder to shoulder in a collaborative setting with someone, and I can talk to you face to face, there's some things I'm not going to have to write down. Because once this conversation is over, we're done with it, we've made a decision, we move on. If I have to go through 3 people to get approval on something, now I've got to document it so that everybody has the same understanding and all those sorts of things. So some things about agile processes simplify and maximize the amount of work not done by moving you into closer collaboration and closer communication. And that's a different way that you can get that simplicity, is look for simplicity in the process. There are lean methods like value stream mapping, where you look at how do I get the valuable aspects of this product out, and what are the steps that add value along the way to help you understand where you might be adding in steps into your process that are not adding value. So all of these are things that sort of play together in looking at both the complexity and the simplicity of your product and the complexity and simplicity of your process.
Right. When you said the process part, I started to think about work in process, some of the more Kanban kinds of things. People will look at those now and determine, well, I don't need to do all this stuff. The simplest way is not to put everything into play at once, but to do it in groups,
to finish
what you start first, as opposed to dividing and conquering and having too many things going at once. Mm-hmm. And for those of us who've been around back in the day when you had machines that would go out and pull, and every 10 seconds or whatever it was, they'd pull the next port, and they keep doing this. And if you got too many, you'd end up with a machine that was thrashing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the more elegant solutions, although complex, end up with people thrashing when you don't need to go there. It's human nature to want to make...
So this is really a mindset shift.
It's a mindset shift, and
now,
it also...
There is a contracting aspect to this.
Well, there is a contracting, but before we get to that, there's also the engineering mindset where you've got to make sure your engineers are trying to get the simple solution and get to the end first, because they like to do... complex experiments. Yeah, you can call them experiments. It's fun to play. They're geeks to a certain degree. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they need to understand where's the end and how much time do I have to get there.
And is this the time to be experimenting?
Right.
Or is this the time to be producing the value?
Some of the programs I've talked to recently, they actually allow a session that it's part of a hardening sprint, but they don't use it to fix things with the program. They allow them to go out and play and do what ifs. And
yeah.
With the goal, only goal is they have to have something that's beneficial to the program at the end of the 2-week sprints that can be demoed that will help them solve some problem
and
they've run into.
And there are some of the scaling techniques for Agile, like the Scaled Agile Framework, actually. They call that a hardening, innovation, and planning sprint.
Yes.
And that's starting to be adopted by some of the programs that we're seeing.
Okay. So now that we've talked about the engineers... and how well, I am one, you know.
Yes, you are.
Geek on the forehead, but when we like to play and we like to figure out new and different ways to do it, but that's, you know, one thing you have to realize, that simplicity is sometimes better, and we can get done with that part. Now there's the contracting side. Those guys aren't technical, typically, and they have very rigid ways of doing things.
Program managers are generally not as technical.
Generally not, although if you're lucky and you get an engineer who's turned into a program manager, they understand the engineering side and they can help you get to the simplest solution faster. But they also have to deal with the actual contracting officers and how do we put this into play. And sometimes it's not simple.
So this is where, from a contracting viewpoint, you have to know that if you're in an Agile setting, that there are going to be times when people come back to you and say, we don't need to do this. And if you've constructed your contract in such a way that every detailed requirement must be executed, then you're going to actually be doing work that doesn't need to be done to provide value in the solution. And one of the recommendations that we've made and that we've seen work well is to really be careful about what's the contracting level of the requirements that you put on the contract. If they're at too low a level, you're going to end up doing work that is not needed. You're going to end up adding complexity to your solution, and you're going to end up spending money that doesn't need to be spent.
Right.
So this is a real area where if you know you're going to be contracting for Agile, look very carefully at what's the level of requirements that I'm making contractually required to be implemented.
Yeah. It's one of those situations where too high of a level isn't enough to give you enough oversight and insight in what's going on.
And confidence.
And too low of a level paints you into a corner where you're going to end up doing things that after you get down a certain point in your design and your architecture and your development, you'll realize you don't need to do.
And
if it's already on contract, you either have to go through the lengthy
right.
contract change process, which is also time-consuming and expensive, or you do the work that really isn't needed but it's contractually required.
And I'll give you one example that we heard about. Won't name the program, but we do know of a program that actually hired a CETA contractor. That's a contractor that provides services to the PMO. And they were put in between the developer and the PMO so that they could do the documentation that was required by the contract. Even though the PMO didn't necessarily believe that all that documentation was needed for the end solution, it was still contractually required and had to be produced. They didn't want the developers spending their time doing this, so they actually hired someone that also understood the system to do this for them.
You needed them up front, but as things evolved and technology changes or the requirements from the field change, some of the stuff becomes OBE'd, but it's in a hard
overcome
contract.
By events.
Yes,
that's
overcome by
one
events.
One of the things that we frequently see in long-standing programs, especially when you have a program that starts out with one idea of what technology is. In today's world, the technology environment can change much more quickly than what's typical of our life cycle. I think that we probably, even though we probably have more to say, we've probably said enough on this one. Let's talk about the next episode. Marianne and I are going to explore the 11th Agile Principles. The best architectures, requirements, and designs emerge from self-organizing teams. We've talked a little bit about this before, but we're going to talk some more about it in terms of the technical aspects of how self-organizing teams work. Listings for papers, blog posts, and podcasts related to SEI research on Agile adoption in DoD can be found at sei.cmu.edu/acquisition/research. If you'd like more information about the SEI's recent publications in all areas of our work, you can download all of our technical reports and notes at sei.cmu.edu/library/reports-papers, that's all one word, .cfm. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you for listening.